You're listening to the HDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Welcome to the HDB podcast. In this episode, we will focus on soils. After the recent wet weather, it's made it increasingly difficult to get crops into the ground. Managing soils in these conditions requires a lot of planning and coordination before and after major weather events. Today, we'll hear from two soils experts, both who have recently spoken at Monitor Farm events. Philip Wright from Wright Resolutions Limited has been working on the new HDB Cultivations Guide, and he'll give his views on how we can manage soils with them being so wet. After, we will hear from Joel Williams from Integrated Soils, an independent plant and soil health educator and a healthy soils advocate. He'll take a closer look at plant biodiversity and how that can help with soil management.
Could you give a brief summary of your presentation today?
Yes, Judith. Because it's my second time at this Monitor Farm with Colin, we covered the basic principles on the first visit 3 years ago. So it was a very quick recap over some principles of avoiding damage, controlling damage and remediating damage. And then what I was trying to do then was go through some very much more recent examples of using the situation that we've got. I mean, the topic today was looking at soil damage on headlands and structure and stuff. So with that in mind, if you've got some areas that are showing more signs of damage on headlands, we've been involved with some quite interesting work looking at loosening through growing crops, particularly cover crop, to actually get a situation where if the cover crop hasn't established perfectly across all of the field and it's only in certain areas, use that as your indicator, as your litmus test, if you like, and then potentially look to do some sward lifting type action on the areas that need it.
Thanks. Now, we've had a lot of wet weather recently, and it's meant that drilling's been more than a challenge for some. Last time we had wet weather was this bad, probably 2012, I don't know. What lessons did we learn from that year, if there are any that can apply this year?
I think the fact that at some point conditions will change, the weather will change. I think you're better off not forcing the crop in, but waiting for the conditions, and that even probably is now going to mean a spring crop or a very delayed drilling crop. If that's the case, you're better to do that and grow a good competitive crop than you are to try and force it in and achieve damage while you're at it and compromise yield. You know, you've still probably got all your input costs, although spring crops might cost you less in terms of control measures and ag chems and stuff. So I think if you can, avoid certainly forcing the crop in.
What would you advise people to do to find out whether they have got damage and if so, how extensive it is?
Yeah, you need to get the spade out. Use what's there. Have a dig down. Use what's there in terms of growing roots. Do they appear to be restricted? Are there areas where roots restricted or water's restricted? Is it being held up? And basically have a check and see, in a part of the field that visibly looks fine. So you give yourself a bit of a benchmark as to how the soil is anyway naturally and the amount of effort it takes you to dig through it, and then move into areas visibly on the top, maybe where there are a wheeling compaction damage and things. And then you can compare those two different situations and you start to get a feel for relatively how affected that field is.
What should farmers do to reduce the risk of compaction soil damage?
Yeah, the subject of prevention as opposed to cure was quite a topical one today. Minimise wherever possible your tyre pressures or your ground pressures, whether they're exerted by a tyre or a track. Keep those as low as you can. Clearly, you've got to have enough weight on the bit of kit on the tractor to be able to provide traction, and you've got to have enough weight to be safe for turning and things like that if it's mounted equipment. But given that, maybe take a view. Do I need to go with a completely full drill hopper? Could I just half fill? If it helps me save weight and that helps me save pressure, that's a key thing, really. So, yeah, manage your pressures as best you can, minimise them. And wherever possible, as a result of that, keep weights down as well. particularly when soils are most vulnerable to damage, is when they're wet and when they're loose. And if they're both in combination, as some are now, they're going to be very vulnerable.
Thanks. We had a look at a few of Colin's fields, and there were cover crops, I think, in all of them, apart from the one with the cash crop in.
Yeah.
Would you like to just expand a little bit on the role of cover crops in the rotation?
It's been a good journey for Colin down that road on this farm, and certainly what they're doing and what they do generally is to provide roots that grow through the soil at every opportunity. So if he's delaying drilling or he's spring drilling for whatever reason, putting a catch or a cover crop in to just keep putting roots through the profile, massively important. That action of growing is also removing moisture, provided the actual crop's growing. Then we're every time the soil wets up with another shower of rain or another bout of rain afterwards, the crop can start to extract some of that water back out again, and that was clearly evident when we were walking the fields today, where there was a cover crop, the actual soil conditions were drier. Generally they were good through to depth, there's plenty of roots in there, plenty of fibres to hold the soil apart. So provided, I think, you can manage your canopy of the cover, avoid them clearly going to seed and stuff like that, but also if you can manage the canopy, and really that's determined by the drill. Some drills will cope with an awful lot more surface canopy cover than others. Having the ability for air to get through and to help to dry the surface can give you a natural tilt forming action, which in turn can help the drill again. But yeah, overall, all of those, from my point of view, with soil structure and cultivations, are very important before we even start to consider holding and capturing nutrients that otherwise could probably run off. And Kelly today discussed that in detail as to how much nutrition we can actually capture from the soil that would otherwise have been lost, particularly in a year like this.
Great, thanks for bringing that up. Finally then, we've got the new cultivations guide coming out, long awaited, from AHDB. You've been heavily involved in that. Would you like to give us a little bit of a summary of what we can expect to see?
Yeah, it's really trying to sort of pull together all aspects of soil and how we can move it, manipulate it, or otherwise. Various techniques, trying to really summarise the broad spectrum of options that farmers have got, and trying to give them a way of looking at all of the options and seeing which aspects of the cultivation techniques, which aspects are most important to them, so that they can start to sort of have some meaningful thoughts as to what are really the key things that are driving whether they want to change a system or a part of a system. So we look from basic first principles through to right the way through to drilling the crop, and it very much ties in with the Good Soils Guide and the sort of more soil physical aspects of the job, and this brings to that part either where cultivations, drilling, planting, crop establishment techniques can then work to the best aims for the soil in the end.
Thank you, Philip. Thanks very much.
Hi, Joe. Would you please start by introducing yourself, what you do, and sort of who you work for or who you work on behalf of?
Yeah, my name is Joel Williams, and I'm an independent plant and soil health educator. So I work for myself. My business is called Integrated Soils, and really the bulk of the work that I do is really education. I do a little bit of consulting, on-farm consulting around the place in a few different countries with some different farmers, but the bulk of my work is education. So I deliver seminars, workshops, speak at conferences, and educate farmers about plants and soils.
So what is your background? I believe you're from working in Canada, but you've also done a bit of work in the UK.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm half Australian, half British, and I've lived between those two countries quite a lot, all my life, until about 2 years ago I moved to Canada. So prior to that, yeah, I've done quite a bit of stuff around here in the UK, and but in the last couple of years I've been very active over in Canada.
And you've been labelled as a soils expert. So what have you been doing to make yourself a soils expert? What does that involve?
Yeah, I have to be honest, I hate that term. I hate that title. The thing that I've learned about soils is that, the more and more you learn about them, or certainly in my case, the more and more that I've learned about them, the less and less I realize I know. And I think that's true for everybody, really. Soils is a really big topic. They're vast, they're complex, they're intricate in so many different ways. So I think the more and more you uncover and dig into this topic, it gets bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger topic to understand. But nonetheless, yeah, I've worked in soils a lot my whole career. I studied agricultural science and focused on soils at that time, and then really since then have worked in various kind of technical and consulting kind of an advisory kind of roles in that time, and have always had a keen interest, always reading, always learning new information. And so through all of those years have learned a lot about soil, but have learned a lot about sharing information about soil. And that's kind of what I do, as I say, a lot of now educational work and trying to take that complexity of soil and break it down, simplify it, and explain it in a way that's digestible to of course, particularly to farmers. But I do also speak to a whole range of different audiences, some consumers and gardeners and chefs. I kind of speak to a lot of people, different people these days, who kind of want to understand more about soils.
So you've spoken a bit about sharing, Joel. What have we learned, or what have you been sort of doing in Canada that could potentially be applied in the UK?
Sure. Yeah, I'd say there's a few commonalities, there's a few overlaps that is happening in many parts around the world. There's a lot of farmers becoming really re-engaged with their soils, re-interested in their soils and the health of the soils, and therefore their potential, the productive kind of potential of their soils. So there's a lot of similarities. A lot of farmers, both in, say, here in Canada, are looking at things like soil organic carbon, soil organic matter. That's something that I think we've all been aware of for a long time that's important, but I think there's some renewed vigor and renewed interest in how important that really is. Obviously, that comes with a bit of a link with the whole climate change discussion in soil carbon's role to maybe play a piece of a puzzle in the broader climate change discussions. But more specifically on farm, of course, that organic matter helps to hold nutrients, support soil organisms, and that's a really key thing. I think many farmers are becoming very interested in the soil biology piece of the puzzle as well. It's our emerging understanding around microorganisms in soils, the living component of soil, how they interact and how they can help crop production is definitely a commonality all around the world. And I'd say that the other piece of the puzzle that is particularly strong, I think, in Canada, but catching on quickly here in the UK, is also plants, using a bit more plant species diversity. So things like companion cropping or intercropping. I'd say there's some very, very good case studies and some very good traction happening over in Canada at the moment around intercropping, or growing kind of two crops together at the same time, that kind of step away from monocultures. And there's certainly some farmers here in the UK also doing that. But I would say, I think at the moment, Canada's just perhaps a touch ahead, and there's some very interesting work and case studies emerging out of that. And I'm sure UK will be not far behind in their various examples as well.
Brilliant. So we're at Malmesbury Monitor Farm today, and obviously you do a bit of work in the UK, so you have some knowledge of what happens inside. We've had a bit of rain over the last few weeks, and that's affected people putting crops into the ground and bits and pieces, and soil management is sometimes the last thing that people really think about, but the first thing they think about when it's raining or when it's drought and bits and pieces. So what will be your message for the farmers here today, who some of them potentially might be looking at a difficult time ahead?
Yeah, sure. I think when we're talking about issues like soil water and ground conditions for drilling or for farming operations, when we open up that point, that discussion there, certainly we have to focus on things like soil physics, the structure of the soil, how well that soil is aggregated. This is a key focus, because the better the soil structure, the better the soil is aggregated, i.e. soil particles kind of clumping together, that means we create pore space in between those aggregates. And it's that pore space that is absolutely so key, so central for ensuring that water infiltrates down into the soil, but then carries on percolating down through that soil. It's when we have poor soil aggregation, poor or substandard pore space, and poor connectivity, that's when water can sit and become the soil can become waterlogged. So soil physics, soil structure is absolutely key in those kind of discussions. And when we have better soil structure, better soil aggregates, better pore connectivity, then that water will move in and move out of the soil quicker. And that means the soil can dry out that little more faster, and then farmers can get back onto the land and do their various operations. So that's a key area. And so in order to optimize soil structure, then we have to have these discussions around tillage. You know, we do know that moving towards minimum till and no-till systems, that's what helps to maintain those soil aggregates and to maintain that pore space connectivity. That is a central focus. So definitely we need to have some of these hard discussions around that transition towards tillage. And I know that's a controversial topic for some, or some people like to clash opinions on this one. But I think it's very clear, even if you're not going to go to no-till, you definitely need to be looking at how you can minimize your tillage operations, because it is that maintains aggregates and pore space connectivity, as I mentioned. And then the other piece that kind of links a little bit to our broader discussions today is this thing around plant diversity. So there's some very good evidence highlighting that more plant diverse systems, which means different plant species and therefore different root characteristics, rooting habits, root growth architectures, that is also a key strategy in which farmers can use to improve that structure, to improve that aggregation and that porosity. So more different species with different root systems is also a really important and practical strategy that farmers can implement to improve that structure of the soil and improve the conditions when environmental conditions aren't great.
So Joel, you mentioned soil biodiversity is an area where, you know, potentially we could get some benefits. Are farmers prepared? Are they doing enough? What's happening on that front?
Yeah, definitely. So that's going to be the theme of our talk at the Monitor Farm today, is how what happens to the soil's physics, the soil's chemistry, the soil's biological kind of properties when we increase plant species diversity. So I'm going to share some pieces of research that has kind of looked at that, the impact of more plant diverse systems on various soil properties. So that's what we'll be talking about. And yes, this is something that farmers should definitely be looking at closer, and looking at more so. It's beginning, definitely. Like I mentioned, one small example there would be the intercropping and the companion cropping. You know, that's a little step from, say, monoculture from one species, even just to two species. That's a small step, but actually a very important first step. And I'll share some examples today on those intercropping systems, highlighting that even just two species can actually really change the whole soil dynamic with some of those various interactions. And so that is beginning, I think, as I mentioned, both in many parts of the world, Canada here and many other countries, Australia also true, US farmers are looking at things like intercropping. And it then extends beyond that to even more diverse systems. So, and you know, that becomes easy in a grassland, in a pasture system, where you can, you know, create a much more plant species rich pastures and grazing lands, which is an important thing for the UK, being the fact that we have so much grazing land here in this country and good conditions for environmental conditions for that grazing land. So, you know, moving away from just a simple ryegrass or a ryegrass and clover mix to these more kind of diverse herbal lays or more diverse pastures, this is definitely something farmers should be looking at more and more, because there are all sorts of benefits to those soil properties. And I would say that yes, that's happening already. It is happening here in the UK, but definitely there'd be benefits from kind of accelerating some of those discussions and those practices.
And what would drive that change? So what can we get to change farmers' behaviour? Because we always talk about when it comes to knowledge exchange and getting people to change their practices, behaviour change is a long-term thing. How do we get farmers to switch on to this new way of thinking, onto this new way of cropping?
Well, you know, obviously at this particular moment in time, with a potential green Brexit on the agenda, that has been one, you know, key driver from a policy front that is going to really contribute and has already. People are looking at this now, I think that's going to be one of the key drivers. Farmers getting paid for public goods and more biodiverse agroecosystems is considered a public good. So that's going to be, the stick that is going to drive a bit of change. But actually, there's a lot of carrots to drive change as well. And I think that's what's going to come out of the other side of that, is that when farmers increase the plant species diversity, the benefits from their productivity, but also their profitability, is what is really going to then, I think, really catalyze that transition and that change. And that's the point. There are many, many financial, economic, and productivity kind of benefits to increasing that plant species diversity. So I think, therefore, having the case studies, having peer-to-peer farmer learning will become key. Tools like Twitter, where farmers can see what other farmers are doing, and events like, Monitor Farm. You know, what you guys do here is also a good example of, let's get farmers together, let's put them on a real practical working farm, and let's go explore what strategies others are doing and share ideas and learn from each other. So I think events like this and other field days, similar type thing, those will be key, because farmers like to see, what other farmers, I'm going to share a lot of research today, some technical information, this kind of thing. And that's all very interesting. And it's important to have that as your foundation, as your base. But at the end of the day, farmers really need to see these things in practice. So having field days, events like Monitor Farms, Twitter, peer-to-peer learning, that's then what's also going to really speed up that transition.
Okay. Joe Williams, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the HDB podcast today. For more information, please visit hdb.org.uk/greatsoils for all the latest resources and materials on soil management. The next HDB podcast will be looking at doing a special on BP 2019.
If you've got ideas
for future shows
or thoughts
on episodes you've listened to, tell us what you think
using our short online form, which you can find on our podcast page or in the episode show notes.